Welcome to the Index Podcast, hosted by Alex Kahaya. Plug in as we explore new frontiers with Web3 and the decentralized future.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to The Index, brought to you by The Graph, where we talk with the entrepreneurs building the next wave of the internet. I'm your host, Alex Kahaya, and today joining me on The Index is Aishwarya Gupta, Senior Manager at FinTech and DeFi. He is a finance professional with majors in FinTech, an advisor to multiple Web3 companies, and founder of the education and simulation protocol, BattleBrains. He also received Best Educator Under 30 for his teachings on blockchain. Thanks so much for being here on the show.
Thank you, Alex, for having me here in the show.
So you're heavily, I mean, obviously very experienced in the blockchain space, advising and investing in a bunch of different companies. And your main focus, it seems like, is in the Polygon ecosystem. Can you talk a little bit about like how you got here and why you ended up where you are?
Absolutely. So I started my journey as a finance professional, and while working as a finance professional, I was just trying to look out for new technologies and just trying to upgrade myself. That's how I started tumbling on various technologies. And slowly and steadily, I think I started with analytics, then went into RPA, and then finally went into blockchain. So while working with American Express, I was working in the treasury domain. And that means that we settle a couple of billion dollars on a daily basis across the globe, which means that every market has different timings and everything. So there was a huge problem that I saw within the team, that the team had to be very accurate, getting out very late and everything like that. So that there should be something that could go out and actually solve this. So that's where I actually started learning, or I just heard about blockchain. I started researching about it, saw how it works. It took me a good amount of time because I was completely a non-tech guy. But slowly and steadily, yeah, what happened was I went into it, and then I started researching if my organization was doing something on the same lines. So at that point of time, there was a integration that was happening between for US and UK merchants using a blockchain platform. And so that is how like I basically entered into Web3. And that was my first, you can say, work which I did getting into this industry.
You work with Polygon Technologies. What is your role there and what do you do?
So in Polygon, currently what I do is I head all the relations that are made between fintech across the globe. So all the major fintechs that are actually working are onboarding onto Polygon. So I am their first point of contact. I would go into the calls. I understand what they want to build. I then suggest them what are the things that they can do. Then basically I help them get to that finish line and make them get the product out there using Polygon technology product suites, which are out there. So that is my primary role. Apart from that, I just ensure that within the organization, the DeFi, whatever applications are coming in, so whatever support that they require from the Polygon ecosystem, we as a team just go out and provide that.
Gotcha. And can you give me some examples of fintechs that you're seeing coming into the ecosystem and what they're doing? I mean, whatever you can share. You know, we can talk more about the technology, but the use cases are things that people can start to understand much faster, in my opinion. So like, what are some examples of stuff that you're excited about from real fintech, not just DeFi, but like fintech that's coming in?
Absolutely. I think the amount of interest that is there in fintech has been like beyond the roof, I would say. I cannot like basically name 99% of them because most of them are under NDAs. So won't be able to go out and name them, but just like, for example, the biggest consumer-based fintech in US, that's particularly launching something with Polygon very soon. Some of the markets in Brazil having user base of 50, 60 million users, they are just going ahead and integrating some of the Polygon products and Polygon suite in Brazil, Argentina, Peru. And then we can talk about Philippines. We can also talk about Europe. So one of the biggest fintechs in Europe as well. So that way, what basically the use cases are coming out is where people are just trying to ditch Swift network, which is very slow, by the way, and they're just trying to go out and adopt cross-border payments using real-time settlement, maybe on the Polygon chain by using stable coins. Some of these fintechs are trying to create their own royalty programs so that they are able to get that customer retention and the longevity of the customers. Some of them are trying to go out and create an identification system for the country. Similarly, some of them are trying to enable trading of crypto assets on their applications. Or so, and let's say some of the neobanks are actually trying to go out and trying to find some better returns for their customers. Like, for example, if you look at some of the countries, the interest rates are almost zero or negative, so or very low. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to enable some returns for these customers, which might be, let's say, 5, 6, 8, 9%, which is like way, way better than and are able to go ahead and help them just fight the inflation rates that are across the world. So, I mean, these are some of the use cases which are there. That being said, there are now new use cases coming up in insurance, in regulations and regulatory sandboxes. So a lot of such use cases are actually being created out of blockchain right now.
That sounds exciting. Like, you guys have a lot of traction. Maybe we could talk more about the chain itself and how it relates to Ethereum, because I think there's a lot of confusion out there about this. You know, there's this like, hey, it's a layer two, or is it a side chain? Like, what is it, and what does that mean for users and like for security and things like that?
Absolutely. So I think what happens is when you talk about Ethereum, Ethereum is something which has been like one of the best layer ones out there. And when you talk about Polygon, what Polygon does is Polygon just ensures that it just creates like a scaling solution for Ethereum. Why? Because currently, if you go out and do transactions on Ethereum, there are two problems. One is limited block space, which means that for you to go out and process a particular transaction, it will require a high cost of doing a transaction. On an average, could be like $10 to $20 per transaction. And the second is because of the limited block space, the time required to process a transaction is also slow. So on Ethereum, you can process somewhere around 15 to 20 transactions per second, which is comparatively very slow for real world adoption. What Polygon actually goes out and does it, it enables builders to go out and do the same transactions at a higher speed, at a fraction of a cost. And then what it does is it rolls up the whole bundle of transactions processed onto the Ethereum world. So what that means is basically our TPS is somewhere around 7,000 transactions per second. And then when you talk about fees, it is less than a cent. So these are the two things on that. And then when you talk about like how exactly the processing happens is, so on the POS chain, the validators go out and validate the transaction. And after validation, what happens is there is a proper, you can say, bundling of transaction that happens, and a summary is created, which goes out and is, you can say, stored on the Ethereum network, which just adds on to the security of our chain itself. That being said, like now today, Polygon, it started as a Plasma layer, which was just like to process and batch transaction and send it. From there, we have just gone out, and today we have seven solutions out there. Polygon POS chain. The POS chain is basically like I told you, it's a side chain secured by the permissionless set of POS validators. Then we have Polygon Edge, out of which one of the particular product of Edge is Supernets, which is basically a modular and an extensible framework for building your own private or public Ethereum compatible blockchain. So you can build out your own blockchains out of Polygon, which could be your own private chains as well. Then you have Polygon Nightfall. So Polygon Nightfall is something which is one of a kind scaling solution that uses the optimistic rollups along with zero knowledge proof to process transactions. This, it cannot go out and process smart contracts, but it is basically for doing transactions in a private manner. So these three solutions are completely live today. Then we are working on Polygon ZKEVM and Polygon Maiden, Polygon Zero, and Polygon Avail. These are the four solutions which are in development right now. And as they develop, I think we can come back again and discuss more about them.
Yeah. Can we talk more about the private chains? Does that settle back onto Ethereum? Like, how do you create security on those chains?
Specifically talking about Polygon Supernets, what it does, it enables you to deploy your own network of blockchains. And what that means is basically ensures that whatever smart contracts that you were deploying on Ethereum, you can exactly deploy the same contracts here. You can have, but what you can do is you can have custom features, which means you can build by developing just by putting in plugins. You don't have to like fork a chain to go out and create your own chain. And then it's basically these plugins are way user-friendly than earlier, which are there. And then when you talk about these supernets, basically another thing that happens is you can go out and you can control over the net itself, which means that you can go out and ensure who can deploy smart contracts on that, who can do the transactions on that. And it solves one of the biggest problems for enterprises who wanted to go out and have a solution where they wanted to have the data set with them. They did not want to go out and take that data set somewhere else or make it public, because of the privacy of the transactions and everything that they do. It also helps a lot of governments as well to go out and run their own CBDCs, run their own sandboxes to ensure or to foster innovation and so forth and so on. And that currently, if you talk about SuperNets, the tested transactions, you can say what it can do in a day is somewhere around 120 million transactions. So that is something which is there where you can go out and do somewhere around 120 million transactions, which is considerably good enough for any fintech enterprise to go out and actually do something of their own. And also, like, you can have your own token as gas token. One of the biggest problems that people also face is the gas fees, right? So you go out and when you are on Ethereum, you have to pay the gas fees on Ether. When you are on Polygon, you have to pay the fees on with Matic. Here, what you can do is you can choose your own token to go out and create a gas fees, to pay the gas fees, and you can set that gas fees, which means it does not matter what, like in POS chain or Ethereum, what happens is the gas fees fluctuates based on the transaction that happened. If there are a huge number of transactions, then at a particular point of time, the transaction fees or the gas fees will increase tremendously. However, on SuperNet, you don't have to worry about that. You can set the fees as 0.1 cent and it will forever be 0.1 cent. That being said, what happens is the validators that are there, we are going out and we are having professional validators, which you can go out and choose. So should you don't want to have your own validator set, you can choose those validator set, thereby making it still decentralized in nature, but still private in nature.
How many validators do you need to have it be considered decentralized?
There's no particular definition about it. I can say, like, you can have 5 validators, you can have 10 validators, you can have 100. I don't think there's a particular definition which can say that how many validators.
So, but each of these chains, like, the part of starting it is you go out and, you know, there's a network of people like who run these, and you can go and hire them to process the transactions and just negotiate the fee and set the fee. Very interesting model. And I assume all this is open source. People can go find their repos. Yes. And go look at it.
Correct. Yes.
Okay, I want to talk about your education background and learn how that ties into your work. You know, you've built this education platform called BattleBrains, and it's a simulation protocol. What is that?
So imagine, like, what happens today is basically when you're talking, or when, let's say, you want to go ahead and tell your friend that let's use some DeFi protocols. What happens is they will ultimately go to the website. They will not understand anything. They don't know what a MetaMask is. That until unless you log in through a MetaMask, you don't even are able to go and see the website. So what happens is that goes out and that this engages people from actually entering into DeFi. So while teaching live some of the batches, and I'll just take example of 3 batches, and this is where I changed significantly the way I taught. The first batch was where I just taught DeFi as, like, in a presentation. So all I had was slides. So I'll show this is how Aave looks, this is how MakerDAO looks and everything like that. At the end of the batch, the final class, there was just 30% attendance. People, nobody actually interacted with the protocols. So I went ahead in the second batch. What I did was I taught them through presentations, and then I actually went ahead and showed them how the present protocols work. What happened at this batch end was 15 to 30% people actually went out and used some of the protocols. In the last batch, what I did, the third batch, what I did was I went out and I airdropped 1 Matic to everyone whom I was teaching. Now, in this batch, 85% of the people actually started interacting with the DeFi protocols, which made me believe that it's not that they don't want to use it. So today, if I want to go out and learn on the live net, I cannot go out and pay $10 gas fees for an Ethereum transaction just to learn how to do a swap. That's not going to happen, never going to happen. So that's one problem. If you go on a layer 2, let's say, to go out and do that, then on-ramp, off-ramp, KYC, and a lot of things happen. Then again, that does not allow people to go out. Then the third problem is, let's say you can go out and say, why, I can learn it on a testnet. The problem with testnet is you have to find a faucet from where you have to find an asset. Then you will go out and bring it. And also the data on the faucet is on the testnet is highly skewed. You will never find a correct data.
Yeah, it's not the real experience, right? Like, and most people just don't want to take the risk, right? It's a lot of effort and risk for them. You know, $100 for some people is meaningful. And how are they supposed to play with some DeFi protocol if they have to spend $100 to do it, right? So yeah, it makes sense that you'd have to airdrop to them.
Correct. And this is where what we did was with BattleBrains, what we're trying to do is we're trying to create simulations. So let's say the first simulator that is coming out is of Aave. So now what we do is we have created an engine which replicates exactly what is happening on Ethereum mainnet. And on the front end, we just paste the Aave front end. So now what you do is when you open a simulator with fake money, you're doing the transactions in an environment which is exactly real. Just that everything is fake there in terms of money and investment. This way, people can just go out and do whatever they want. They're not going to lose any money. They're not going to be worrisome about, oh, what have I done? How do I unstake?
Oh, that's awesome. It's like playing poker with fake money. How does your business then, how does Battle Brains make money? I mean, how is it funded? Is it just like a nonprofit or?
From the front end for the users, it's basically free. It's 100% free platform. We'll never charge anything from the customers. On the back end for making simulators, we have a revenue model where we go out and we tell the protocol that what we are doing is we are giving you end users. Users who came to your Discord and said, what is Aave? You direct them to us. We tell him, not just tell him what is Aave in video content. We also make him simulate, learn everything and send you an end user. So a value proposition there for which we build them.
How do you manage all this and do your role over at Polygon Technologies? That's a lot. I mean, it's really impressive. Like, it's like a very concrete business model and a good educational, you know, tool, but it was probably a lot of work to build that and manage all the stuff you got going at Polygon.
Yeah, like we just got success on the simulator part after 4 months. Finally, now we can replicate all those things very easily. I have a full team out there who works for this whole simulation part. My role there is not that much. My role is just to ensure that everything is in place. But really, the team there is working very hard to go out and do all the stuff there. So that's why I'm able to go out and manage time and both the things.
So I'm curious what you think is coming next in this space in general. Like last bull market, we saw NFTs just erupt in value and volume. And I kind of primarily saw it as, you know, these collectibles and like self-organizing communities. But now there's, you know, companies exploring loyalty programs and ticketing and like all sorts of other use cases. I'm curious, you know, and it doesn't have to be NFTs either, but I find in every bear market, there's like a whisper of some new thing, some new use case. It was DeFi, then it was NFTs, and you kind of start hearing about it now. And then like a year from now, it'll just be like a rocket ship, whatever that is. I'm curious what you're seeing that maybe no one else is seeing that is going to be like a really interesting use case that, you know, drives a lot of growth.
I think there are two things which are there. So NFTs, like in the last bull run, the PFP NFTs were the major traction. But now the real utility NFTs basically are getting a lot of momentum, a lot of use cases getting built around that. So that is one. Another is like when you talk about adoption, the fintechs, the way. So today, let's say any chain, can we are at, for the active number of users, Polygon chain is number 3. So in terms of active users. So now even with that, we have somewhere around 2.5 million active addresses out there. And when you talk about fintechs, each and every fintech brings like 10, 20, 30, 40, 100 million users. So that's like where you go out and you say, wow, this is like the mass adoption that we were talking about. So something related to these kinds of things. So I think these two trends are something which we will see over the next bull run, because right now these things are just starting to develop. And once they do, they will make a lot of eyes to turn around and everyone just aping and, hey, I also want to do exactly the same that this particular fintech has done. So that's where I am preparing for currently.
Yeah, it's exciting times. So yeah, mass adoption. This is something that we talked about a lot in 2016 and 2017. I think there was a lot of hope in the industry that back then that we were going to see mass adoption. But really, we just saw like another leg up. I always felt like the infrastructure was starting to be built then to enable mass adoption, but it still wasn't there. But now you've got all these open source components that are like layers on top of the blockchain. Because I kind of like look at the blockchain as just hardware, right? It's just hardware, physical hardware, the protocol. And then you have tools on top of that that developers can build things on top of pretty rapidly. Or like a fintech that's like a Web2 company can integrate with. What are some of the open source tools in the Polygon ecosystem that you're excited about that speed up development, and how is that impacting adoption?
I think one of the major things that we talk about and why Web3, blockchain, DeFi and everything moves very fast is because of the nature of the code base, which is there, which is open source and composable. Now, let's say, I'll just take one very simple example, Uniswap V3. Uniswap V3 got created, and that was one of the best ways in which you can go out, put liquidity, earn fees, have a limit range so that you don't get a lot of impermanent loss and everything like that. Now, what you see is on Uniswap V3, we see a lot of active managers, active fund managers, passive fund managers going out and building strategies to go out and ensure that the profit maximization is highest, impermanent loss is the minimum, and something like that. So when you talk about DeFi and when you talk about Polygon, so Polygon's whole ecosystem is so composable that each and every Lego is so much open source and so much in a way that can be connected, interconnected to each other. And we always boast for our business development. Like, there's no better team in business development than Polygon. I'm self-bragging, but that's what the word says. That's the reason why Polygon ecosystem has been thriving. I remember last year when I joined, we had 2,000 dApps in September. Today, we have 37,000 dApps. That's the growth. So from 2,000 to 37,000, that's a 35,000 dApps growth. So it's huge. And that's the only reason why it's huge, because you have proper documentations, you have necessary partners ecosystem, which is there. So today, if someone wants to go out and develop a project on Polygon, it's very easy to go out and get support in the form of grants, in the form of help, in the form of vouchers and everything like that. A proper discussion with the team itself to go out and see whether your protocol could work. If it is a good project, how it can be incubated, how that can be supported, how Polygon from its all of ethos, marketing, ecosystem support and everything like that, business development can support and grow that project. I mean, these are the couple of things which are now together coming in and actually building all these things up.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys have worked really hard. I know that, you know, everybody in the space that's competing, especially for that like sort of L1, L2 is battling it out. You know, one thing about developing open source is that everybody can see it, right? You're developing out in the open, and you know, when you have 30,000 developers building or apps, right, being built at least, right, all those eyeballs are looking at the code, and then that can add to the security of the network because people can find bugs. And as these things scale, like every layer one and L2 has run into some kind of issue, right? Like with scaling or whatnot. I know that one issue that I've heard about with Polygon was block reorgs. Like, I honestly don't know too much about it. And I'm curious, like, if you can explain more what that is, why it happens, and what the team is doing to, like, you know, what the community's done or what, like, some of the supposed solutions are to that specific issue.
Absolutely. So block reorganization is nothing but, for example, let's say your transaction has been completed and put on a block and has been put on the blockchain. That means it should be immutable. What has happened in the past is some of these blocks, after being put on the block, but before going on the Ethereum main chain as the finality one, what have happened is these blocks, the transactions have, after being put on the block, have come out in the sense they were reprocessed. So that is something which is reorg. So there was a chain which was going and you just reorganized it. So that was an issue that at the start we had it. But slowly and steadily, that started to go down. Today, if you go out and see these reorgs, they have reduced tremendously. That being said, we are already working on a POS V3, which is supposedly going to be launched very soon, and which has completely 100% eradicated this issue of block reorgs, which used to happen. So we're pretty much confident that the issue that we had is going to be solved very soon.
Can you share like what the technical solution, like how that works?
I think that's still in the works. We have still not disclosed that. Once we're successful, then we will open source that as well. So I think at that point of time, I would be able to talk more about it.
I tend to not be like a maxi of any chain, right? Like, there's so many different ways to try to approach these hard problems. You know, everybody has different solutions. And I think at the end of the day, like, everyone's trying to build the space up. So it's good to, you know, again, it's like that spirit of open source working together to kind of solve the problem. So yeah, thanks for sharing. I was just curious about that because it's come up sometimes with some like conversations I've had with enterprises, like looking to build. Their first question is always like, well, what chain do I use? And then they start evaluating, you know, one of the top like five chains to pick from. And so there's always like some kind of trade-off or whatever. There's a lot of open source tools out there you can use that make it faster to build. So we're getting towards like the top of the show, and I kind of always ask this, but what have I not asked you that I should have asked?
I think one of the questions that still remains open is with the regulations. a lot of regulations and everything that is coming out today, and being that regulatory clarity is something which is still letting these technologies not evolve as fast as they could. But the good part is now the governments are actually turning their eyeballs, because the enterprises are actually starting to utilize these products. So now it's not at a phase where, hey, it came and it will go. So now they have to actually go out and tackle it. But that is something which is still a lot to evolve. And I think education is something which is very important. And I think the show that you are doing is one good thing about the whole ecosystem as well, that you tell the views of everyone and out there, so that more and more education can be spread and a lot of people can learn out on how these things work and evolve, so that they actually start thinking about it even more and give it the real value proposition that it requires. So that is something which is important. And I think it's slow, but we will get there. That's something which is there. So that time has gone where we used to just talk about, oh, what would be the price of Bitcoin by the end of this year? I mean, personally, me, I've not even seen the price of Bitcoin in the last 6 months. So that's progress for me, I would say.
And I think this goes back to what I was saying about like 2016, 2017. There was a lot of hype in this last bull run, but the one before, like the hype was insane, right? Like it was all about like ICOs and flashy booths at conferences and stuff. And part of that was the pandemic, because like we didn't have the opportunity to do that as much. But the other part of it is, I think there's like, you know, the serious builders kept building and through the last bear market into the last bull market, and serious companies started paying attention. There was a TechCrunch article the other day about like, you know, a major coffee chain, Starbucks, like building loyalty programs with blockchain technology, right? And there's like, you know, more and more of that kind of thing coming. And I think that forces regulators to realize like there is like you said, a real value proposition with these technologies. This isn't just like, there needs to be regulation for sure, but this isn't like totally the Wild West, right? Like there are some people like trying to build real value here. So, well, listen, thanks so much for being on the show. I really appreciate your time. It was great, great catching up. And I really appreciate you being here today.
Absolutely. It has been amazing being here and helping you and the audience to learn a little bit more about Polygon.
You just heard the Index Podcast with your host, Alex Kahaya. If you enjoyed this episode, please give the show a 5-star rating and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your favorite streaming platform. New episodes available every other Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in.